A nervous run-up to New Year's on stock markets.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Investors in Europe have been moving their portfolios away from risk in the day since it became clear a new general election will occur in Greece in the coming weeks. Key stock indexes in many of the countries that use the euro were down about 1% by midday. On Tuesdays, as stock markets open in the U.S., we consult analyst Julie Neiman at Smith Moore & Company in St. Louis.
Everybody's been expecting another Greece fire for some time, and here it is. The big thing is, who's going to foot the bill? You've had everybody looking the other direction in terms of financial stability, and that's what's gotten them into this huge problem. The only way to keep it together at this point is to kick the can further down the road. Put your blinders on. But I think this is going to be the year that Europe really decides whether or not this union is viable, and that'll create some real consternation in the European markets.
Also, after a brief rise yesterday, the Texas price of crude oil is down at $53.43 a barrel. It was above $100 6 months ago.
This is high excitement for oil. And, of course, now you're hearing all the sobs coming out of the oil-producing countries that this is going to cause a global depression. Absolutely the opposite is true. At this point, we're still looking at excess production. We have plenty of energy. You'll see a lot of marginal production here in the United States, namely the gas frackers, who were unable to get the good pricing that they need to justify all the debt they took down. Those are the people who are going to bite the dust. But this is the best thing that could happen for consumers. When you're putting it into the grocery cart and not to the gas tank, that means you're going to have global economic growth from that standpoint.
Analyst Julie Neiman at Smith Moore & Company in St. Louis. The last snapshot of American consumer confidence for the year came out today. Consumer confidence rose from November to December. Consumers were happier with the present situation, and fewer said jobs were hard to get. But they're slightly less confident about the future this month. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has more on the context.
Consumer confidence has been rising all year and is now back to levels we hit before the Great Recession. Economist Chris Christopher at IHS.
People expect the economy to improve and their personal finances to improve.
Certainly true if you own stock, with repeated records on Wall Street. But why is it true for middle-income folks, with long-term unemployment still stubbornly high and wages more or less stagnant? Analyst Bernie Baumol says you have to look at the bigger economic picture.
We've got the best job growth that we're seeing in 14 years. Companies are benefiting, as well as consumers, from lower gas prices, from the lowest cost of borrowing in history.
But Baumol still cautions, until the global economy returns to health, U.S. companies might not feel optimistic enough to go on a huge hiring spree or raise wages. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
10 trains pulled into the station right on time is not the definition of news, but a delivery tracking company reports that UPS and FedEx got most of their packages to their intended recipients in time for Christmas. 98% success for express packages, according to ShipMatrix. A year earlier, the media labeled it a fiasco when FedEx's on-time rate was 90% and it was 83% at UPS. Hi, this is David Brancaccio, host of the Marketplace Morning Report. Marketplace has been on the air for 25 years, and that could not have happened without support from listeners like you. So please, if you can, make a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today and help us keep our coverage relevant and compelling. And you should know that your gift, really in any amount, counts twice thanks to a dollar-for-dollar match from the Candida Fund. Donate at marketplace.org by December 31st and help us reach our goal of at least 2,500 donors. Thanks for your support. I like to say it takes a big man to go on national radio to reveal his ignorance, and I am that big man as I turn to face Stefan Richter, editor-in-chief of theglobalist.com, with his challenging quiz questions that he brings to us from time to time about our globalized world and our economy. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, David.
All right, do your worst. What do you got?
Well, we've all heard GE's Jeff Immelt and others talk about the new manufacturing renaissance, and we see it on magazine covers and stories without end. My question is very simple today. What percentage of U.S. jobs does the manufacturing sector account for today? A, 1.5%, B, 8.2%, C, 12%, or D, 30%?
It's going to be 30%, but what was the penultimate choice? It was like 12 point something percent was one of 12%. Your choices? All right,
mm-hmm.
That's going to be my guess.
it is correct if I had asked you something else, which is what's the share of GDP that manufacturing accounts for? But employment, no.
Okay, but the percentage of jobs.
Correct.
Okay, so with efficiencies, with productivity enhancements, it's going to be a smaller percentage of jobs that it creates for us.
Very good.
So 8%.
Very good. But here again is the kicker. By and large, the jobs that are coming back through onshoring or homeshoring, they don't pay any really good wages anymore, like they refer to from the past. Many of them are basically at will, like call center jobs, people walking into the plant in the morning don't know how many hours they will get to work. They don't have benefits and so on. So there's a big dichotomy here. On the one hand, in the media, we hear all the time, U.S. manufacturing is back. By implication, all the great old manufacturing jobs are back. But by benefit pay and so on, no way. What they're bringing back is sort of the cheaper jobs from India and Mexico and so on, where there's not a level of sophistication that it's worth the travel distance and all of that. But it is not a great manufacturing renaissance in the United States by any means at this stage.
Well, thank you for the quiz, Stefan. You can follow Stefan Richter on Twitter at The Globalist or online via theglobalist.com. Stefan, thank you.
Thank you, David.
And there's news that central bankers in Britain are keeping an eye on social media for a sense of how the economy is doing there. The Bank of England's chief economist told Sky News that official statistics can lag and are subject to revision. Quote, what this scraping of the web can do is give us a better today read on what's going on. If the Federal Reserve were to try this, imagine the possibilities. Perhaps we could collectively help delay the moment interest rates go up by tweeting day and night about what a hassle it is to find a job or to get a raise. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.